Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to Taco Tuesday. We actually have a sound effect for that. We're not so full from Thanksgiving anymore, we can't play a food sound effect. Hit me some Taco Tuesday.
But more importantly, y'all know what today is, right?
It's Taco Tuesday!
Taco Tuesday, we're there. We're working our way towards the weekend, and we're glad you guys are here. And that is JP pushing buttons on the board. Hey, man. How you doing?
Doing good. Never full enough for Taco Tuesday. I can always take some Taco Tuesday.
That's right. You still got to try out that place we talked about the other day.
Ah, yes. I know. I didn't get a chance the other day. It sounds good, though.
It's worth it. I'm just saying. The fajitas there are mighty fine. hey, we got a great show laid on for you. I purposefully do not have guests today. I needed a day to unpack some detailed information. And so we're going to just jump right into a triple dipper that is filled up with content. I mean, like, holy cow, can it get more detailed? So hit it, man.
The triple dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. So first out the gate, I'm going to finish up what I was about to start yesterday, illegal numbers. I even got more content. In fact, I'm watching it on the screen a minute ago. They're actually talking about it right now on the big screen, one of the big screens here in the studio. Illegal numbers. What are the numbers? Because numbers don't lie. What are the numbers that say where we are in terms of what it takes to basically sustain all of the illegal immigrant programs that are ongoing in the United States right now? It's unbelievable the amount of money we're spending. And I got some comparative numbers, and I got some projected numbers, and I got some numbers that'll curl your hair. So we're going to talk about them. The illegal numbers, number one, triple dipper. Number two, military-minded. That's what I'm calling it. Are we military-minded? Are we more military-minded than where we've been? Are we, by the way, a nation that cares about our military, and are we going to grow it back to the greatness that it once had? That's what I want to know. Military-minded. Are we there? I'm going to talk about things that are underway. I'm going to talk about things we need to get back to. And I'm certainly going to talk about where we are as we speak on issues that have to get fixed to be more military-minded. We'll talk about that as number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, I don't know if you've noticed, but America is already choosing to leave behind the lead from behind and lead from the front now. I'm loving that. I'm not sure what I just said. But anyway, the bottom line is this. We're going to stop with the Biden administration's version of leading, which is called leading from behind. And we're going to get into the Trump version, which is called leading from the front. And I'm going to be honest with you. As you watch it right now, already happening, you can see it. You can see what happens when someone is willing to be vocal and lead the way and point to a direction and say, that's where we're going. And people respond to it. So we're going to talk about leading from the front, number three, on the Triple Dipper. All right, let me jump on in here to the Right Side Way opening monologue. I'll remind you, the Right Side Way monologue is brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald, partner at Wilmer & Lee, and I'll tell you more about him here in just a few minutes. In the meantime, let me jump on in. So, I'll be honest with you, I have a theory that, generally speaking, most people are lazy. Go with me here. Not everyone, but a lot of them are just plain lazy. I mean, because of that inherent laziness that I see in other people, there are actually things that I do differently. And I mean that. Like, for instance, if there's two water fountains and one of them is the short water fountain, I drink from the short one because most people won't bend over that far. You check me on it. Next time, take a look, and I bet you will see the short water fountain is dry from lack of use. It's about drinking water from the cleanest fountain at that point. How about the Walmart parking lot? The Walmart parking lot, I generally park a little bit further out. I'll be parked quicker and I'll be in the store while there's other folks who are lapping the parking lot for the fifth time looking for a spot that saves them 20 steps of walking. Y'all, the mission is the shopping, not the parking. Or if I go to a restaurant. If I go to a restaurant that has self-serve drink dispensers, I look for the drink dispenser that I want that is furthest from the counter because people won't take the extra two steps to the side if they don't have to. That means I'm more likely to get the best drink with the most fizz, in my opinion. Just a theory, but I think it works. It's the best drink that I'm after, not the convenience. And by the way, don't even get me started on people who won't replace the toilet paper roll. There's a special place in heaven for people who will always replace the role for the next person. Just saying. But these things, while they may sound amusing, they're really about priorities. They're about getting something done. They're about remembering what the actual mission is and being willing to do the hard thing if necessary to get the job done, to get to the goal. Everything from national security to fizzy fountain drinks. Having priorities in order is a part of what drives the mission, and it drives mission success. So there's a lot to be said for having priorities in order, and which, that, by the way, that's not to be confused with what I call good ideas. Priorities are meant to be the most important things, the issues or the challenges or the tasks that are to be done first and foremost because they carry the most weight. Priorities achieve the highest outcomes. Priorities are what works towards the better good, but then there's the good ideas, just the good ideas. Those are just neat things that people dream up that fit their agendas, but they don't really speak to the greatness of actual achievement. I mean, we used to joke in the Army, and I know that right now JP is going to put it up on the screen for you. We used to joke in the Army, you could always tell when the good idea fairy would fly through the room and sprinkle magic fairy dust. Suddenly, we had new acronyms, new minutiae, new bureaucracy. The good idea fairy had rarely done anything to make us more combat effective as a military, but, you know, good ideas, they're not always in line with actual priorities. Let me tell you, as an airborne infantry officer and as a graduate of the U.S. Army Ranger School, I spent a good bit of time having certain things hammered into me. When you're on a patrol, for instance, you come to an extended halt, you set up what's called a patrol base, a defensible site off the beaten path where you can finalize preparations for whatever the mission is you happen to be on. But in all of that training and field testing, it was hammered over and over again that we were to engage in patrol base activities in light of what we called the priorities of work. So why would that be? Because, left to their own devices in the heat of the moment, people are lazy, generally speaking. People will often, too often, default to their own personal comforts. They'll sleep and eat and feel sorry for themselves unless the leader of the patrol maintains the discipline of ensuring that they do the priorities of work and that the priorities of work get accomplished. So here's how that goes. You patrol as part of a small unit. You arrive to your intermediate point prior to the actions on the objective, and you set up the patrol base from which you're going to operate in the final stages of the mission. And like I said, if left to their own devices, many light infantry guys would just immediately go into rest. They'd get some chow. They'd grumble about their sore feet. That's why you have to make sure somebody's leading. And you do things, first and foremost, in a certain order, by the way. And you delay the need for personal comfort and gratification until all else is done. So you do things like you put effort into security. You establish a withdrawal plan. You ensure communications are established. You prep for the next phase of the mission. You conduct weapons and equipment maintenance. You resupply water. Only then do you eat and rest. Because if you do that, if you have your priorities in order, you increase your survivability. If you do that and your priorities in order, you increase not only your survivability, you increase your lethality. If a unit does these things, it's increasing its likelihood of mission success. Sounds reasonable. Priorities of work. Keyword, priorities. Here's an example. In 1942, Admiral Chester Nimitz was told the premier aircraft carrier in the U.S. Navy, the USS Yorktown, had been too severely damaged at the Battle of the Coral Sea. The Yorktown had been hit by a 500-pound armor-piercing bomb that had smashed its way through the flight deck, obliterated six compartments, and much of the ship's lighting and radar and refrigeration systems were out of whack. When the Navy told Nimitz that the Yorktown would need 90 days of repairs, his reply was, "We will have this ship back in 3 days." 3 days, not 90. Well, to accomplish that goal, Nimitz waived safety regulations and he ordered 1,400 repairmen to work around the clock. The power demands of the repair work were so great that blackouts rolled through Honolulu. But the Yorktown, it made it out of dry dock just days later, ended up turning the tide at the U.S. Navy's most decisive battle, Midway. It was an epic moment of a leader recognizing that priorities were not the comfortable route. Priorities were about doing what was needed to accomplish the mission. The mission was not to make sure that everyone in the shipyard got home on time for dinner or felt comfortable and unburdened in their work environment. The mission was to win the war, and the USS Yorktown was needed back in action to make that mission. I mean, think about this. Priorities of work. Doing things in the right order. Doing them because the mission requires it, not because your comfort requires it. Wouldn't it be amazing if politicians realized that the common defense is not met by uncommon good idea fairies who prance through the room sprinkling good idea fairy dust? Remember Biden's Build Back Better plan? A bill that Nancy Pelosi blew through the House, filled with trillions of dollars in climate change activism, social justice, and big government spending on just plain old good ideas. It stalled in the Senate when Joe Manchin balked at it. But when Joe Manchin came back around and sold out for a slightly reduced version, we got the infamous $1 trillion Inflation Reduction Act that did not reduce our inflation one bit. In fact, it inflated our economy and drove our inflation to 40-year highs. The priorities were completely out of whack. There was no sense of reason. There was no sense of the priorities of work that actually stimulated the economy. That's because it was never about the economy. For them, it was about funding the good idea fairy. Remember the pullout from Afghanistan? Was the mission really to end the war? Well, wouldn't it seem reasonable to ensure then that all Americans were actually out of Afghanistan before we announced that mission was successful? Before assigning massive aid to the Taliban and giving them money on a pallet? That's because it was never for Biden about prioritizing actual American interests. It was about funding the good idea fairy. Or what about Title IX? What about the Title IX issues with relation to men playing in women's sports? I mean, it would seem reasonable to think that a White House study to issue a proclamation on gender equality wouldn't require destroying Title IX by pushing for transgenders in female sports. But you know what? The reality is, it was never for them about prioritizing women. It was about answering the call of the good idea fairy. I also find it odd, by the way, that it was deemed necessary to ensure that the State Department, the U.S. State Department, had a full day devoted to advancing the use of made-up pronouns, as opposed to working on the issues of advancing American foreign policy. Because in reality, in the Biden State Department, it's never been about what's good for America. It's been about advancing the causes of the good idea fairy. Look, I could go on and on here, but the point is the left has immersed themselves in chasing the easy roads, the crazy roads, the roads to perdition, none of which are really about the actual mission of securing the best for America. That is the mission, not the good idea fairy stuff. It's about what is best for America. I mean, picture the United States, to use my analogy earlier about the patrol base as a soldier, picture the United States as one big patrol base. Are we setting up our security first? Are we ensuring that communications are clear and concise? Did we prioritize adequate care for mission essential equipment? Did we facilitate adequate planning for movement in the next phase of the operation? Or did the administration just slip into what was comfortable, what addressed their personal needs? And I'll be honest with you, that's what we've been seeing. So when a patrol base is shoddily established, then the troops are more at risk. It's no different here and now with the manner in which the Biden administration has been running things. They have no concept of the priorities of work. I mean, what priorities? They aren't evident to many, not at all. Just a bunch of good idea fairies with no real sense of the actual mission. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, that's the thing, man. You can look at it, and I'll be honest with you, if you watch the way they do things, you will find that it's never about what they say the outcome is. It's more about the good idea fairies and having little ideas sprinkled in the mix that they're trying to get done, because their little agendas, their personal comforts, are what's more important. When in reality, the mission is supposed to be about what's good for the country. And I'm ready to get back to that. Make America great again, I say. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Text lines are open. Call them, text them. Same number for both, 833-687-4448. Hey, before I go any further, let me just tell you. So the sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue, as I mentioned, is attorney Stan McDonald. So Stan McDonald, I know the guy personally. I think the world of him. Attorney Stan McDonald is a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. He's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law in North Alabama. Not only will Stan advocate for you and fight for your legal needs and rights, but he's been an absolute warrior for years on the same issues that all of our Right Side Ruffian community cares about. Attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions over the years. He knows how to represent you in court in front of federal, state, and local decision makers. And when Stan McDonald's on your side, you will have no greater friend, and likewise, your adversary will have no greater foe. So here's the deal. You want legal help in the Huntsville area especially? Attorney Stan McDonald at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee is an America First family man and an attorney who's vigilant for those he represents. You can call him today at 256-479-3020. That's Attorney Stan McDonald, Wilmer & Lee Law Firm, 256-479-3020. All right, I got to do it. You ready? No representation made. The quality legal service be performed is greater than quality legal service performed by other lawyers.
Even better than yesterday.
I just don't know how the words come out that fast.
Sounds like you've done that once or twice before.
It's still silly. You know, what's crazy is, and I know I'm running a risk by saying this, but of course we're saying the quality of legal services is better. That's why we're advertising.
That's the whole point of the advertisement.
That's like the whole point. I'm an attorney. I think I'm better than the other attorneys. What's wrong with that? Anyway, okay, fine. Just so you know, there are other attorneys in the world, but I like Stan McDonald, and I like me. All right, several texts already in, and I gotta ask you. So people who are watching this live online, by the way, you can watch it live online on YouTube, on Rumble, on X. Just go to Right Side Media or me at Sid and Phil Williams. Anyway, you had the picture of the Good Idea Fairy posted the entire time.
Yep, I did.
Which is kind of an obnoxious little picture, really, isn't it? It's crazy, isn't it?
Well, you kept alluding to it, so I wanted that. I wanted it to really drive home on the point of it. I
sent it to you so you could do that.
Yeah.
But my concern now is that people will see that and think that my sign in the background is a Good Idea Fairy sign while I'm speaking, which is what it looks like.
Well, if you just say watch out for the Good Idea Fairies, it's different than you actually seeing one and going, oh no.
And by the way, this Good Idea Fairy is not attractive like Tinkerbell. No. This Good Idea Fairy is picture a pudgy middle-aged guy with a two-day growth of beard smoking a cigar while he's wearing a pink tutu, sprinkling pixie dust. That's the Good Idea Fairy. Several text messages. Jeff from Indiana says, you know, Phil, if Saturday Night Live was a right-wing group and would actually put funny skits on about how feckless the administration has been, it would actually be a funny show. Because Lord knows there's been enough material here with everybody being so goofy in this administration. Brother, it keeps on going. You know what they need to do? I think they need to do Saturday Night Live needs to do a Good Idea Fairy segment. They just need, like, they used to have some great characters, like, you know, they would have Gumby, they would have Buckwheat, they would have all these different characters that came on. Have the Good Idea Fairy.
That would have been a good Chris Farley skit, the Good Idea Fairy.
Oh, yeah. All right, we got to work on this. Who's our contact at SNL? We need to call them. All right, I got more text messages. I got more stuff. We got a great show. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. Alabama, and I mean to say this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. I am sitting here, by the way, I'm just grabbing this next to me. I have this rather large, rather attractive Bowie knife that someone gave me yesterday. I've got one. I've actually got two at home, very similar to it. One of them, my dad carried or your granddad actually carried in Vietnam, still hanging on the wall in my study. But this one comes, and it says it right there on the sheath. This one comes from Bear and Sons. A lot of folks don't realize, and by the way, I'm trying to get them on the show. So if anybody out there has a personal contact with the owners of Bear and Sons over in Jacksonville, Alabama. They are one of, if not the, last fully American-owned knife manufacturers in the nation. All American. And they are a prolific, I mean, this is a quality blade right here.
It's a really cool knife.
And they do everything. They do folding knives. They do, you know, they do lock blades. They do stuff like this. They also, oh, by the way, do Damascus steel folded metal knives. They do some quality, you know, one-off kind of workmanship, and then they do the mass production stuff. But Bear and Sons, anybody has a contact, I want to know. But anyway, this is just given to me, and so I had it in the studio, and I thought, I got to wield it on the air.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy, though? There's only one, like, fully American knife manufacturing company left, and it's right in our backyard in Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking maybe 25, 30 minutes from where we're sitting right now. I am determined to get them on the show. I just want to talk about them.
Yeah, it's a really, really quality knife.
All right, we got plenty of text messages in the hopper. Let me grab a few of those real quick. Bruce from Springville says, well, the best example, according to the monologue, is the American people rejected the Democrat fairy ideas. Dragon Hall. Yes, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to getting back to a mission-minded mindset. Priorities of work and all that, man. John from Minor Hill, Tennessee. Says, why don't we have Elon buy SNL and make it funny again? That is genius. I don't know if they can, but there is, you know, there's all that buzz about whether he would buy MSNBC. But I think that would be...
He's making them really upset. I don't know if you saw Rachel Maddow crying on air about his tweet. He made a meme of something in regards to him buying MSNBC, and she didn't like it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I look at that and think probably one of the greatest insults they could find is him saying he doesn't want it.
Exactly. It's not worth the buy.
Yeah, he's like, doesn't want to put up with them, you know, having the complaints at work and then him having to fire them and then start all over again.
Another funny name was Alex Jones to buy it is what people are floating out there.
Oh, now
make it the new InfoWars.
That is, God, this is getting better by the minute. Mike from Florence, Alabama says, my good idea, Fairy, is that the devil in disguise I thought I got rid of long ago, trying to make me do wrong. He's now here to distract me from my priorities. I'll start on a project or repair. He shows up with a good idea or something unrelated and not priority. Thankfully, if I'm the only one it causes problems for. When that happens with someone else, the government, for example, it's a problem for everyone. Okay, I see where he's getting to at the very end of it there. But yeah, and by the way, I get it. Distractions, things that take you away from the priorities, I get it. And it's interesting. 2 Timothy 1:7, I'm going from memory. 2 Timothy 1:7 in the New American Standard said, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but one of power and love and self-discipline. So, that being said, hunker down, brother. John from Huntsville says, Phil, fantastic monologue. Also, did you hear that jury deliberations have begun in the Daniel Penny case? Yes, I have. Said, I hope he's found innocent because, in my opinion, there's no doubt he's an innocent man. I think he needs to be found innocent just so that people will know it's okay to help people. I mean, I look at that and go, daggum, I get it. There's a guy that died, but the guy that died was threatening to kill other people. This is a no-brainer case. This case should never have been brought, to be honest with you. But we're looking at the prosecution of the Good Samaritan and the vilification of doing good. That still boggles my mind. That's where we are. In fact, I've been saving notes. I've got a place in my phone where I like all the monologues. Y'all don't realize, but sometimes I'll be sitting there and all of a sudden a good idea for a monologue comes up, and I know if I don't jot it down, I'm going to forget it. So I've got this whole list of things that I might do for a future monologue, and one of them is the number of times we've seen in recent years when the good guy gets put on trial. You got Daniel Penny. You've got Daniel Perry, which was the Army sergeant in Austin, Texas, who was an Uber driver in his spare time, and he pulled right smack into the middle of an Antifa riot. Rounded the corner, and bam, he was in the middle of them. A guy with an AK-47 came up to his window, pointed it at him. So Daniel Perry, the sergeant, pulls out his weapon, defends himself, shoots the guy. Daniel Perry gets convicted. Luckily, Governor Abbott from Texas pardoned him because it was so egregious. You got Kyle Rittenhouse. That was horrible. Anyway, all I'm saying is I got notes on this.
If you look at what's going on in the UK, it's pretty similar. Like, we have to get out in front and set a precedent of we're not going to go down this rabbit hole. Because you got people in England who are, you know, getting thrown in jail just for being in a protest. So, like, if people who are defending themselves are, you know, starting to get arrested and charged here, like, I fear we start to go down that path. So, they need to stop it where we're at right now.
Yeah, and by the way, how is it they're triaging their cases and making this the priority?
Yeah.
Exactly. You look at it and go, I get it. There is what's called prosecutorial discretion. That means that a prosecutor has a right to look at his caseload and decide to some degree that I can pursue this one, I should pursue this one, I have to pursue this one, and prioritize them and put his, you know, emphasis on this convicted murder is going to go, but that jaywalker over there, I don't have time for that. We're going to find a plea deal for that one and get it off my docket. And it's hard to say it that way, but that is reality. And then you look at some of what's happening, you think, how is that your priority right now? And I'll be honest with you, I think that's the legal version of the good idea, Ferry, now that I say it. Thomas from Athens says, priority number two from Jesus is love your neighbor as yourself. My faith informs me that your neighbor is anyone who may be capable of salvation. Okay. And helping a neighbor is the willing the good of the other. So on this Giving Tuesday, it's Giving Tuesday? Okay. It is Giving Tuesday. I've seen that. Since perhaps let's believe that our life's mission and give thankfully of our time, talent, and treasure to a neighbor regardless of his or her faith walk. Thank you, Thomas. Squared away, man. Three more, then I'll be done. Jim from Grove Oaks says, Colonel, you are a mighty brave man with that comment about replacing the toilet paper. No. You know, I was, so I can remember doing this with my kids. Josh, Caitlin, come in here. Which one of you didn't replace the toilet paper? Oh, Dad. No. Which one of you didn't do it? Look, let me show you something. You ready? And I remember doing this. I started counting. 1,001, 1,002. While I'm doing that, I'm getting a roll of toilet paper out of the closet, walking it over there, putting it on the thing. You know, 1,009, 10. Look, it took me 10 seconds. And then I took it off, put it back in the closet. What are you doing, Dad? Now you do it. Oh, Dad. It'll take you 10 seconds to do it. Anyway, Casey Junebug from Hartzell says, great monologues. I've actually prayed that God will help me not to crave comfort. I want to use my life to glorify Him. Sometimes that requires doing hard, uncomfortable things. We have become programmed to seek in the most comfortable and the easy scenarios instead of the most productive. Thanks for the reminder today. Well, thank you, Junebug. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, even on the seventh day, God rested. So I think there's a fine line there, and I'm one to talk because I work 7 days a week a lot of times, and I work nights and early mornings. But there's a time and a place to rest, certainly. The question is the priorities. That's what we're looking at. Is the priority right now the most important thing is the rest? Or is the priority right now the most important thing is a mission or a job or a task that you're on? And that's the thing. If the priorities are in order, you'll still rest because there will be a time when that's the priority. Life lessons from Phil Williams. Two more. Gosh, Chef Ben from Aniana says, about the toilet paper roll. Should it be over or under when you replace it? Over, brother. It hangs to the front. JP's nodding his head. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's over.
It's absolutely hangs to the front. Toilet paper should never hang to the back. You know why? I know that.
Why?
Because they put little printed patterns on some of them, and if you hung it from the back, you would not be able to see the pretty pattern.
That's true.
Does that not speak to the moment there?
Yeah, I guess it does. I felt that's been such a stupid argument, in my opinion. that's one that people die on a hill on. It's like, geez, guys, it's toilet paper.
But it's toilet paper, but there's a reason why it's there.
That's true.
You know what? And here's the thing. Don't go fuss at somebody. Just change it if you don't like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, the things that I think about, apparently, in my spare time. TC from Priceville says, speaking of Alex Jones, I think he would make a fantastic White House press secretary. There would be blood on the floor. Can you imagine?
They would have to stop doing press briefings after the first one.
Alex
probably.
Jones, he would be in there just roughing people up.
He would nail it, but he would go off the rails.
How big is he, by the way? I saw a picture of him standing next to Joe Rogan, and it looked like he was a foot taller than Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan's not very tall. Joe Rogan's 5'8", I think.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, Joe Rogan's not very tall. I think Alex Jones is around like 6 foot maybe, but he weighs like, what, 220?
Well, he's stout. He's a stout guy. He's thick as a brick, but he's looking at it going, maybe it's the angle of the camera, but I thought he was like, you know, 6'5".
You look at Joe Rogan next to people, Joe Rogan's not a big guy.
Yeah, but I still would put Joe Rogan against pretty much anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying. Yeah. Nani from Beverly Hills says, when Daniel Penny's acquitted, can he sue to recoup defense costs? Maybe. Depends. If they can prove prosecutorial misconduct, then yes, he can. Chip from Muscle Shoals says, unless you have a cat, then you hang your paper to the rear. The cat will still get to it. It's all the same. And yes, I have seen that happen, by the way. What is it with cats and toilet paper? The text messages are cracking me up, so I'm staying on them. Handyman from Caddo, Alabama says the TP goes over the front unless you have cats. There's a second one with the cats. So y'all have some cat scars on your toilet paper.
I've never heard this being the reason. That's funny.
I never have either. I mean, it hangs from the front, y'all. Cat or no cat, shut the bathroom door, keep the cat out. That's all you got to do. Mike from Florence says you hang it over the front, but using an open hook toilet paper holder stops the argument. Open hook toilet paper holder, why does that stop the argument? I don't know.
I don't even know what that is.
You know, the kind, like, you know, that it just slides on the bar and hangs
there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not, I don't understand. Maybe what he's, I don't know. We're going to a break. Let's take a break. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio, with all the finest lessons in how to hang your toilet paper. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. Got some exciting things happening around here with Right Side. We'll be announcing some things in the days to come, but just know that we're excited y'all are a part of it with us. By the way, if you want to get a copy of our Right Side report that gives you things in advance, like by email, all you got to do is on that same text line that a lot of y'all are texting in right now, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Just text the single word newsletter. Text that word newsletter, and you'll get an automatic response back that gives you a chance to sign up for our daily Right Side Report that goes out in advance every day of the show, tells you what's coming, gives you a chance to get resources, tells you what podcasts are out, lets you know new developments, if we got any new merchandise, all the stuff. So Right Side Report, text newsletter to 833-68-RIGHT, or you can just sign up for it on our website, rightsidemedia.org. Brother, are you looking at the toilet paper responses?
This is one of those topics everybody's got a strong opinion on for some reason.
I feel like we have a whole dipper going here on just how to hang the toilet paper.
This could be a one dipper day on toilet paper.
Is that, should I say one diaper day?
One diaper day.
I mean, I got to take a few more of these. I mean, look at this. So Bert from Owens Crossroads says the patent for the toilet paper holder, enough said, and the patent for the toilet paper holder shows the paper hanging to the front.
I didn't even know there was a patent for a toilet
paper.
Well,
there has to be.
I guess so.
Everything's got to have a patent. But yes, so the original patent for the toilet paper holder has the paper hanging to the front. Although that was for the holder, not for the paper. I'm just saying. Yeah. I need to go back and dig it out. I did a whole monologue on, what was it called? The Tear Easy Two-Ply Poo Paper. Because it's a first world problem. The very idea that we live in a country that is so first world that the toilet paper companies are spending lots of money to design the Tear Easy Two-Ply Comfort Poo Paper.
I guess that is something to write a monologue on.
Anyway, Grandma Wanda from Coleman says a cat will jump on the roll with its claws, and once it gets unrolling, he just keeps it going. Great fun if you're a cat. John from Huntsville says, Phil, I saw something on the internet shows when the College Football Playoff Committee reveals the 12 teams in the playoffs. It's Alabama 12 times. LOL.
He's not wrong.
Just say. Bruce from Springville says, remember the battle cry, woke is no joke. Okay, you're right. Richard from Madison says, you hang the paper from the front and you get rid of the cats, all caps.
There you go. That's the best one. You don't hear about dogs going after toilet paper. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's right. When did your black lab ever go after the toilet paper? Didn't happen. Dadgummit. And by the way, Jeff from Indiana says, Phil, I hang my toilet paper so if it pulls from the front, my wife always hangs it from the back. So with our wives being Kentuckians, is that a Kentucky thing or just my wife? Nope. Charlene hangs it from the front. I'm just going to say. And then Michael from Taft, Tennessee says, you hang it over the front if you have no cats. If you have cats, hang it to the back. That way, when they start playing with it, they don't unroll at all. It'll still unroll.
Yeah, it would just unroll backwards.
I'm trying to figure out the physics of this. Why does hanging it backwards stop the cat?
I think that's just an excuse for people so they don't get hammered that they're wrong about going over the back.
This, good gosh. John C. from Madison said, this is a pretty crappy subject. And John, oh, God. John from Huntsville says, you ought to title today's show number one or number two. God,
this was number two on the triple
dipper. So awful. And then Keith on a tractor texted in. He's brand spanking new in the text lines. Just call him Keith on a tractor. Keith, we appreciate you. He says, I put toilet paper in the back because I like to have it like a mullet. Y'all are just wrong, man. This is, oh my gosh. Okay. Listen, we got business to do here. And I'm not even going to start it with 1 minute left. How much have I got? Like a minute?
Yeah, I got about a minute and a half.
Yeah. So let me tell you this. I do have some breaking news. I'm just serious. This is not toilet paper, although it does deal with politics. So it may have some similarities. But we just got news here momentarily ago that the brand spanking new pro tem of the Alabama Senate appears to be State Senator Garland Gudger of Coleman. He's a good dude. I'm a little concerned with some of the votes he cast against school choice, and I think he was pro-gambling. So I'm wondering where that's going to go. But at the same time, Garland Gudger is actually a really good dude as a person. He had a really bad accident this past spring. Was in the hospital for quite a while. But he's back on his feet. He's doing well. And State Senator Garland Gudger of Coleman is now apparently going to be the pro tem of the Alabama Senate. That is actually one of the more powerful positions in all of Alabama politics. I say that because that person controls the flow, along with the rules chairman and a couple others, controls the flow of what comes to the 35-member Senate body for votes. They also control who gets committee chairmanships. They also control a lot of things related to helping with incumbent protection for, you know, re-elections and that kind of stuff. Anyway, all said and done, it's a very powerful position. It can also be a position that if the right person has it, they can truly lead. I've seen it happen. If the right person have it, they can truly lead. And so my hope is that Garland Gudger will be a true leader and will help set a conservative agenda for the Alabama State Senate. That's brand spanking new. We just heard that in the last few minutes. In the meantime, we're going to take a break. We'll come right back. Toilet paper stuff still flowing in the text lines. But I'm going to jump into the first dipper. We're going to talk about illegal numbers. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studio. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on Taco Tuesday. Taco Tuesday, we like to call it. So I'm jumping into dipper number one. I'm calling it illegal numbers. After the distraction of the toilet paper, I'm now moving into the actual dippers. If y'all want to, please.
That took up a whole hour.
It didn't take the whole hour. It just took up the last 15 minutes of the hour. Illegal numbers. I got to thinking. I saw this tweet from DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. You know, it's an unofficial organization being founded with the approval of President Trump by Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk. And its sole purpose is to locate and recommend ways to cut out government waste. Well, so the DOGE account on X tweeted something out yesterday. And it's shocking when you look at it. And it's also one of the things that puts things in perspective. So let's talk about illegal numbers. I got to thinking when I read this tweet that I'm about to read to you, it's so important that we understand that there's anecdotal evidence of the impact of illegal immigration. There's criminal evidence, there's media presence, but then there's numbers. And the old saying is that numbers don't lie. But look at this. In 2023 alone, illegal immigration cost U.S. taxpayers $150.7 billion. $150.7 billion. Put that in context. All of World War I cost $334 billion. So it cost almost half of what it cost to run World War I. The Apollo space program, $257 billion. The Manhattan Project to create the first atom bomb, $30 billion. We spent five times that on illegal aliens just last year. Just last year, by the way. I mean, if you look back to the Biden administration's years in office here, I think you're probably looking at, I'm going to guess, but I'm going to bet you're well over $500 billion. The Panama Canal, of course, it's old dollar signs, but $15 billion to build the Panama Canal, which changed all the world shipping. Do you know this? Ships to this day are built to the specifications of the Panama Canal. The Hoover Dam, $1 billion. Illegal immigration alone has cost U.S. taxpayers $150.7 billion just last year. That's sick. That's messed up. That is absolutely unconscionable. That's a crime. We've been robbed, basically. So I got to thinking, okay, what other numbers are out there? If we're saying the numbers don't lie, what other numbers are out there? So did you see the story about the New York City hotel? The Roosevelt Hotel. This is a landmark hotel, by the way. This is one of those classic old hotels that has now fallen by the wayside to some degree. I did not know this until Vivek Ramaswamy tweeted it out. And oh, by the way, it is confirmed. This is not one of those I heard it on the internet kind of things. So the Roosevelt Hotel, a prominent New York City landmark since 1924, named after former President Theodore Roosevelt, is actually owned by the Pakistani government. I kid you not. The Pakistani government.
Come again?
Yes, indeed. The Pakistani government. Did I mention you hang the toilet paper to the front? The Pakistani government. So Vivek Ramaswamy just eviscerated that one. He said a taxpayer-funded hotel for illegal immigrants is owned by the Pakistani government, which means that New York City taxpayers are effectively paying a foreign government to house illegals in our country. This is nuts. Because the entire 1,250 rooms, it's a huge hotel, the entire 1,250 rooms in the multi-story Roosevelt Hotel are under contract to the U.S. government just to house migrants now. It's a migrant housing center. And it's going to be returned to the government of Pakistan once a three-year lease term expires. So basically, the government of Pakistan is making $220 million to rent out the Roosevelt Hotel to house illegals in our country. Tell me why that makes sense. And the short answer is it doesn't. It doesn't. This is absolutely an unconscious. And by the way, so like the Indian Times in June of last year published a piece that said that, what is the name? Pakistani Ministry of Railways, Khawaja Saad Rafiq, announced that the agreement was expected to generate revenues of $220 million for the Pakistani government. It's theirs. We're paying them. And all the illegals, some of whom are probably from Pakistan, are shacking up at the Roosevelt. The numbers will just curl your hair. When you look at this stuff, you think, my God, the things we could have done. Now, granted, it's government. It's a kakistocracy. It is the least competent among us sometimes that seem to be running things. But the level of jackassery on this, by the way, that's your cue. I guess you can hit the button on that one. I just said it, jackassery. So it just came out. So now you got to hear the sound effect. Thank you very much. The level of jackassery on the idea that the Pakistani government is allowed to buy up a major landmark hotel and then, oh, by the way, let it degrade because it's not been renovated. It's so in need of work. And so the city of New York decides that it's a great idea to spend hundreds of millions of dollars, most of which is, by the way, federal aid coming in to help them, to sustain illegal immigrants who shouldn't be here in the first place. How about this? Pakistani government, rather than creating a tenement for illegals who don't care a thing about our country, how about you come over here and fix your freaking hotel and start treating it like the landmark that it is and let the Big Apple get back to being the Big Apple, the crossroads of the world. It's unbelievable.
Or how about we have it be an American-owned hotel?
That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
God. Okay. More illegal numbers.
Especially when it's, what, named after a former president and it's owned by a Pakistani government. Just saying.
Yeah, at least they didn't name it after the Islamabad guy that we shot a few years ago. All right, so other numbers. What else do we have? Well, here's a good number. There's bad numbers and there's good numbers. I think it's important that every once in a while I stop and remind us we are seeing some improvement on the southern border even before Trump takes office. And in part, that's because of Texas. So I went to this one on LifeSet. Storyline, Dateline, 2 days ago. The incoming border czar, Tom Homan, is basically lauding Governor Greg Abbott of Texas for implementing measures to secure the southern border. Here's a number that I like. I love seeing this. Tom Homan said, illegal migration in Texas is down 86%. That's huge. Remember all the stuff we saw with Eagle Pass, Texas, with the complete just deluge of people that were coming into the different border zone areas. There were just the ports of entry were overrun. They were walking through. There are ranchers down there who are scared to take their trash out without being armed. We had, the one old rancher who shot somebody on his property who he saw carrying a rifle. And then he was being tried for murder. I mean, it's on and on and on. The things that Texas has been through, Texas has committed over $1 billion of its own revenue just to do the things that the federal government wouldn't do. But it's working, and it's proof that it works. Texas migration, illegal migration in Texas is down 86%, says Tom Homan. And that is a direct credit to Governor Greg Abbott and his folks with Operation Lone Star. So, yeah, there are some good numbers. And then there's Chicago. By the way, Mayor Brandon Johnson of Chicago, what qualifications did he even have to be a mayor of one of the greatest cities in the world? Just Chicago, what a crazy, cool, beautiful, big city. So much history there. And they just seem to be into generational curses of bad leadership. Mayor Brandon Johnson, if you're not sure who I'm talking about, you can go online and look at him. He's the guy with the spiky hair who worked for the teachers union. before he was the mayor. Yay! Job description. What'd you do? Well, I was an activist. And then I became mayor of Chicago, and I brought my activism with me. So residents of Chicago are blasting, this is Fox News, Dateline today. Residents of Chicago are blasting Mayor Brandon Johnson over the city spending more than $500 million. That city alone, $500 million. That one city. And oh, by the way, that's just recent money. Johnson and the Chicago's, okay, first of all, he's like a super lib. He's not a little bit. He's like a, if I was in Congress, I'd be in the squad kind of lib. I mean, he's like a Jamal Bowman and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez lib. He's that out there. He calls all of the illegals new arrivals. They're the new arrivals. That's a asinine term. Y'all can see JP's face right now. I just need to keep a camera on you because you say everything with your face.
That's funny. I mean, I guess he's not wrong, but it's a very nice way of putting it. Our pleasantly new arrivals.
It's an asinine way of putting it. It's jackassery. But, oh, you're going to hit the button again, aren't you? Just go ahead. Just when I say it, just go ahead and feel free. It just happens. The word comes out. So Mayor Johnson and Chicago's new arrivals mission, which has so far cost the city $574.5 million since its inception, comes as the mayor is trying to overcome a $1 billion budget. So here's some numbers for you. They've got a $1 billion budget shortfall, but he's also spent $500 million. By the way, $1 billion shortfall? That's not even responsible. Like, how do you go to work in the morning and go, I am so happy with where we are. I love my job. And by the way, we need to find $1 billion tomorrow. So his solution is what? Raise taxes. Of course it is. Of course it is. And the people are having none of it. There was a crowd that showed up, and they're basically, one lady got up there and said, you're being known, you're going down in history as the worst mayor in America. She said, how about starting with cutting your salary? And but she said this, she goes, I got a great way we can fix the budget. Let's start by cutting off illegals who get free everything, free housing, free schooling, free food. Let's start with that. That'll save us a lot of money. Yeah, it'll save you $500 million. There's half your deficit right there. The city has spent $574.5 million for what? What is it they get? City of Chicago, in partnership with the state of Illinois and Cook County, says Mayor Brandon Johnson, has been helping 39,000 new arrivals who have come to our city with things like food, temporary emergency shelter, urgent medical care, education, vaccines, and case management and resettlement support. Resettlement support. What does that mean? Are you giving them a card, you know, a preloaded Visa card, so you can go out there and spend money and find your way to the next city? I don't know. But the bottom line is this. Mayor Brandon Johnson's got $1 billion. There's a number for you. Illegal numbers. They've got $1 billion deficit in Chicago, and they spent $500 million on illegals. And so his choice is, in his opinion, to raise taxes. Love it. All right, I got some more of these numbers. We're going to take a break right now. But yeah, illegal numbers, man, they tell a tale, don't they? Think about the level of insolvency that some of these cities are facing because of illegal migration and bad decisions, because the good idea fairy flew through and sprinkled a little pixie dust, and now they want to spend more money on illegals. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. So the camera was on. I just realized I was, like, studying intently on the screen. But a lot of folks are watching online. We appreciate that. You can always follow us online as well as on our radio affiliates. But you can find us online at rightsidemedia.org, our website on the live video feed page. You can also watch it just directly from YouTube or Rumble or on two of our X accounts, rightside_media. Or you can go to @SinPhilWilliams, which is my personal account, @SinPhilWilliams. Do us a favor, by the way. When you do that, it means a lot to us if you will either hit subscribe or follow, whichever that particular platform has. Because as a business, as we grow this thing, we are committed right now to growing our digital footprint because that gives us the ability to grow, and they have these thresholds you have to meet. And we're pushing for 1,000 right now on YouTube, and we're almost at 700.
Inching closer.
Inching closer.
We're at 680 right now.
Oh, sweet. So we want to hit 700. I'd love to hit 700 this week easily, and then I'd love to see 1,000 by the end of the year. But all said and done, those numbers mean a lot to us. And just like you guys mean a lot to us, it gives us a chance to do more. Those platforms allow you to do more if you meet certain levels, if you will. So anyway, follow us, watch us, subscribe to us, all the stuff. So illegal numbers. Story from Breitbart, Dateline 2 days ago. Whew, Denver. Man, you know what's crazy? I love Denver.
Denver is one of the best cities I've ever been to. It's still to this day, as I travel to more cities across the U.S., Denver's still probably number one.
I love Denver. I love Colorado Springs. Oh, yeah. I love Colorado in general. You know, my time working with Young Life, on staff with Young Life, we have great properties out there. Young Life is headquartered in Springs. What happened to Colorado?
I feel like the best cities like Chicago and Denver are being run into the ground by their leadership.
They absolutely are.
Continually. But it's really sad to see.
Blue cities are, you know, they're blue. So
it's funny to be said.
Yeah, I know. It makes me blue to talk about them. Far left Democrat mayor of Denver, Mike Johnston. He's the one who most recently said he was willing to go to jail. Just golly bomb, I'm going to jail if that's what it takes to push back against Trump's illegal immigrant deportation plans, which, by the way, Charlie Kirk just tweeted out right before the show, and I need to track it down because I don't have the story, but Charlie Kirk tweeted out that a three-judge panel of the usually liberal Ninth Circuit out towards California way just ruled today, apparently, if he's correct. You might want to look this up, man. Just ruled that, yes, the U.S. government can deport citizens regardless of whether a state or locality considers themselves a sanctuary. In other words, we can come in there and get them, and we don't have to have your say-so. We don't care whether you call yourself a sanctuary. So you might want to look at Charlie Kirk's Twitter account. That's where I saw it. But here's the deal. Democrat mayor of Denver, Mike Johnson, has spent over $356 million taxpayer dollars on illegal immigrants. That's like the equivalent of almost $8,000 per citizen in the Mile High City. That's crazy. So the sum was revealed by a research organization that's dedicated to promoting, you know, good government, and this ain't it. They said that 8% of the city's 2025 budget now includes illegal immigration spending. 8% of their budget is now dedicated. My gosh. So Johnston has already slashed city services. Get this. They're already losing. The taxpayers are already losing what they should be getting in favor of giving things to illegals. Here's the numbers. You ready? First of all, well, let me tell you the things they cut. They cut services at recreation centers. They stopped things like planting spring flower beds, you know, stuff, the beautification of the city. They had to tap into their contingency funds to pay for the spiraling costs. $356 million have been spent. 45,000 illegals have come to Denver since December of 2022. 16,000 illegals are now enrolled in Denver City schools. The total cost of the schools alone is $228 million annually. The numbers are staggering. Illegal numbers. More on that. We'll finish it up when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, Alabama, y'all, Alabama. I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in, just for good measure. We were laughing off the air. I couldn't help it. There's a guy on CNN right now who is apparently the ACLU's LGBT HIV chief counsel or something. And it just, it's like, okay, you know what? I'm done. I'm just going to move forward.
Gosh, I wonder why mainstream media is going under so bad.
put that on your business card. Yeah. What did you do? ACLU LGBT HIV. Okay.
I said, what do you do? Not the alphabet.
Yeah, thank you very much. Finishing up the numbers, and then I've got an audio clip that we're going to play you of Mayor Eric Adams, who just really bowed up a minute ago. So, New York City. Am I going to do this first? Or am I going to do this? I tell you what, you know, I might save it. No, I'll just do it. You know, what do you do? Call the audible, Phil. What do you want to do? I'm going with this one, fairus.org. Just one of the numbers that concerns me deeply. Tren de Aragua, the the Venezuelan gang that is now becoming so prevalent in the United States. According to a leaked intelligence memorandum from the Department of Homeland Security last week, they are now confirmed in 16 different states. Tren de Aragua, operating as a cohesive factor in the criminal activity of that state in 16 different states and Washington, D.C. They're impacting over half the country's population right now. The Biden administration has imported criminal conduct, literally imported criminal conduct. Look, when you import the third world, they don't become first world overnight. They don't come here to do all the good things when they're criminals back home. When they come here and you let them in and they are criminals, guess what? They come here as criminals. It's just that simple. And yet the good idea fairy flew through the room, sprinkled some pixie dust, and lo, they thought it'd be wonderful to let them just settle here. And being here will make them better people. Bullcrap. It makes us a worse nation. How about that? All you did was water down the first world in favor of the third world. Does anybody know where the second world is? It's always the first and the third.
That's a good point. I have no idea.
I don't know what the second world even is. Okay, all I know is this. Here's some numbers for you. Illegal numbers. You ready? New York City, according to the New York Post this past weekend, 58,000 illegal migrants are in New York City right now who are already convicted felons or facing criminal charges. 58,000 known illegals who have convicted felonies, or are facing criminal charges are roaming New York City as we speak. By the way, and I had to ask JP to research this real quick for me while I was off the air, because it sounded so huge, I thought, that can't be right. It is right. Depending upon which study you look at, there are currently known to be 759,000 illegals in New York State alone. 759,000 illegals in New York State alone, and of those, 58,000 are known criminals let into the country, convicted of crimes or had criminal charges pending when they got here. And we know that because ICE is tracking them that way. Literally, we know it, and we let them in. We said, what, you got back home, convicted of murder? Psh, New York City will take you. They'll give you free stuff. Hop the bus, man. Here you go. Here's your plane ticket. Come on in. 58,000 migrants with rap sheets. 1,053 of those are suspected or known gang members. So we just let in over 1,000 known gang members just in New York City. We have 58,000. These illegal numbers are killing me, man. They are killing me. I will say this. Mayor Eric Adams, I'm not a huge fan. I'm not. But I will tell you, I think he is beginning to see the light, at least in this case. He's sick of it. Keep in mind, he's a former New York City cop. Doesn't make him conservative, obviously. It's not like every episode of Blue Bloods is, you know, coming out of Mayor Eric Adams' office. But we got an audio clip of him. I'm going to go ahead and call for it clip two for the day here. Mayor Eric Adams just had a press conference, and he basically said, I don't care if I get canceled. He dares the left to cancel him. He's going to do what it takes to get illegals out of his city. Go ahead and play it. I want to hear it. Go ahead.
Those who are here committing crimes, robberies, shooting at police officers, raping innocent people, have been a harm to our country. I want to sit down and hear the plan on how we're going to address them. Those are the people I am talking about, and I would love to sit down with the board of czar and hear his thoughts on how we're going to address those who are harming our citizens.
You're open to that.
Open to?
To hearing what their plan is to deport some of these folks, and you think the city, in some circumstances, should cooperate with ICE.
Let me. You know what's interesting? And I was talking to the team the other day. I want you to all go back and Google Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Google what they said about those who commit crimes in our city and what they said in our country. They said those who commit crimes need to get out right away. That was their position. So this is not a new position, you know, because in the state of era of cancel culture, no one's afraid to be honest about the truth. Well, cancel me because I'm going to protect the people of this city. And if you come into this country, in this city, and think you're going to harm innocent New Yorkers and innocent migrants and asylum seekers, this is not the mayor you want to be in the city under.
Wow. I mean, that's about as strong as it gets. I can only hope it's the case because, you know, he has not been a great help till recently. I think he's just seen that it's too obvious. And you know, and there's also the question of his own, you know, he's got legal trouble right now. There's some indication that perhaps he's struck an accord with President Trump and he realizes where his friends are. The Democrats are trying to throw him under the bus because he dared to speak out against illegal immigration in the city, the great city, New York City. By the way, I love New York City. It's been like one of those things. Charlene and I have made a couple of trips there and just we got great pictures of being there, eating at, you know, in Central Park and just having a great time going to Broadway. That city needs to come back to us, and this is how.
I think what you mentioned of his legal issues may be contributing to him being as outspoken as he is, because I feel like this is the trend started after that happens. I think he's about fed up with, you know, his own party trying to get rid of him. So I think that's what's caused him to be more outspoken on issues
like this.
Well,
he spoke up during campaign season, mm-hmm. and that irked him to no end.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, they're raiding his mansion. You know what? If he's wrong, he's wrong. If he did something wrong, he needs to pay the piper. But I think you're right. I think that he has become more outspoken. But they're after him. They're targeting him because he was outspoken. But it's only made him more outspoken.
Yep. And it's going to backfire on them. I haven't looked into exactly the case with his legal issues. But if he survives that and is able to stay mayor, then they've made him more red pilled. I'll say that.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a hoot if one day he was a Republican? But
that,
you know what?
That'd be great.
The question is, what kind of Republican would he be? Yeah. But We've got the Big Apple right now. You got the former police officer. He was a police captain, a former police captain, now the mayor of New York City, looking at the fact that he's got 58,000 illegal immigrants who are convicted felons in his city right now. And he's like, this has got to stop. And he has literally said, cancel me because I'm going to protect the people of the city. Good on you, mayor, and good luck to you. Let us know how we can help. All right, listen, that's a wrap. Illegal numbers, they're huge. I didn't even get to come up. I got a couple of more stories, and I'm going to go ahead and call it right there because you get my point. Numbers don't lie. And when you're having those water cooler conversations with folks, when they're saying, I don't know, I mean, illegals, don't they need a better life too? Yeah, okay, how about this? Not like that. That's the thing. We, in this country, we pride ourselves upon being the country where the Statue of Liberty still stands and Ellis Island was a thing, and we built our nation on immigration. We're only here because of immigration. But we are not here because of open borders. That's two different things. Legal migration, where you embrace the culture and the very fabric of and where you choose to be a part of the mainstream as opposed to creating the subculture of problems and sneaking across the border. And then, oh, by the way, some liberal cities literally trashing their budgets to give you free stuff, which only incentivizes more people to show up illegally. It's about to all come to a crashing halt, and it needs to. It's an unsustainable solution. Keep in mind, and by the way, my newest podcast is coming out tomorrow, and I really hit on one of the things they say was the downfall of Rome, the fall of the great Roman Empire. One of the contributing factors was a loss of control of their borders coupled with a mass migration of people outside of the Roman Empire flooding in, and then they could no longer sustain themselves. They couldn't control their borders, and they could not control their citizenry, and it watered down who they were even as a culture. And that's just reality. Hey, a couple of quick text messages. I'll change the tune here for a moment. Ken from Harvest says, tuned in late. In regard to the toilet paper, we're back on that. He said, whether hanging from the front or the back, single ply will give you the ability to see the future. I see poop in your hand. That's awful. What? Ken, my gosh, man. Correction.
That's partly on us for not fully reading the text.
I know. I'm like finishing reading as I'm going, oh, jeez. I was about to say, oh, crap, but I didn't. Chris from Gadsden says, the reason why a cat can unroll the toilet paper if the paper is properly rolling to the front is that the cat can slap or paw at it. Chris, you're overthinking this. And unroll it just as a person does. A cat is not going to roll it backwards if the roll is improperly installed. By the way, Chris is a lawyer, and he just lawyered up that entire text. Chris, your arguments to the jury are well taken. Thank you. Badger from Athens says, if you're not a U.S. citizen, you should not be allowed to own any land here. Okay. Oh, he's talking about the Pakistani hotel. Yeah, I got it. I was trying to think, where did that come from? I got you.
And not only that, but the Chinese who are buying up all the farmland here as
That's an issue. At the very least, if you're a country adverse to us, you shouldn't be.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what else do they own? And by the way, there's no telling what they own through, you know, quiet LLCs and, you know,
yeah,
nondiscreet or nondescript little property companies.
But not only that, they make these.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a problem, too.
By the way, you can't see when he says these. Yeah, he's holding
my phone.
Up his
Sorry,
phone.
Yeah, my phone, yeah.
Brian from Decatur says, it's not about the policies of the Blue City mayors. It's the people that voted to put them there and will probably put them there the next election as well. I don't disagree. But once they're there, they're still doing the thing. And look at that. Blue City Mayor Eric Adams has had enough. So how many of these blue mayors are going to recognize that running your city into the ground is really the way to go? I don't care who voted for them. The reality is they're still the ones signing the check when the day comes. So I'm not going to put it all back on the voters, because the guy who's in charge still has a fiduciary obligation to the city that he's there to run. And so, yeah, voters got to change. But you know what? The guy in charge is still the guy in charge. Nani from Beverly Hills says second world under a world population. Oh, and gives me a link. Okay, there is a second world.
Yeah, so I'm seeing Afghanistan, Albania, Angola, Benin,
I got
Bulgaria.
News, man. I've been to Afghanistan. That's a freaking fourth world.
Yeah.
That is the fourth world. Thank you very much.
Don't know how they made it on the second world. Though,
I don't know either. So basically what you're saying is Haiti is third world, but Afghanistan somehow made it to second world? No. Just hard no. All right, last one. We're going to the break. Clint from Tony, Alabama says, these sanctuary cities that are spending millions of dollars on their illegal residents apparently do it with impunity as far as taxpayers are concerned. They either have an awesome PR staff with amazing sales personnel, or as the old saying goes, you just can't fix stupid. I think it's probably a little bit of both, brother. A little bit of idiocracy going on there. All right, we're taking a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Heading out with a little Foo Fighters. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. About to go to the phones, but I got to tell you two quick texts. So Chris from Gaston a minute ago is the one who gave me the overly detailed, highly thought out reason why cats can unroll toilet paper better if it's to the front. He just, and I kidded him about being a lawyer, he just texted back. He said, no representation is made that the information in my text are better than the information in the text of other listeners. Well played.
He texted it just as fast, too. Yeah, <I bet.
laughs> Well played. And then Jim from Grove Oaks says, I always thought capitalist countries were first world, communist countries were second world, and everybody else was third. I can live with that. Can we call that the right side definition?
Well, no. Yeah, so on the list, Russia is on there, too. So it's pretty interesting.
Russia's the first world?
Or in the second world rankings
They're
on there.
They're second world.
According to the source, worldpopulationreview.com. So.
Well. And on that note, let me go to our first world brethren, Jeff from Indiana. Hey, man, how you doing?
You know, if you use a corn cob, it really doesn't matter which way
you put
it on the road.
Stop it right now. Stop it right now. Well, we know that cats won't play with a corn cob, so there's that.
Yeah, but we're all married to Kentuckians, so, you know, mine's a country gal.
Nothing like fried fish and pickled eggs to make you wish you had extra corn cobs, right?
That's right. Hey, but all these legal aliens, they're like, you know, you can do everything you want to do, but it doesn't matter. The only way you're going to get rid of these people is for them to self-deport. And for them to self-deport, you have to make it a punishable by going to jail crime to give someone like that a job. You have to have your electronic verification, and, you know, if they try to give you a fake number or whatever, you know, all this, you know, they're not paying taxes, they're not doing all this other stuff, but you gotta get, you know, drive the money from working, and then you've got to quit giving them a sanctuary for this and everything else. If they're not from Canada or if they're not from Mexico, according to what I understand, is that, you know, you got to go to the first country that you seek asylum in. And, you know, so anybody who's not from those two countries needs to be immediately deported because they're not here under sanctuary.
Listen, and you're right. And the idea of the employer being held accountable, you're right on that, too. Here's the other thing, and I've said it before, maybe talking to you on the phone, but the other thing they got to do, I think, is find a way to put some measure of either sanctions or tolls, taxes, if you will, tariffs, on all the money wired back out to Mexico and the other countries where people illegally are coming in from. Because if you make it harder for them to earn the money here, and then certainly harder to get it out of our economy back to their home countries, they're going to quit. They're not going to do it.
Exactly. And the third thing is, you know, everybody says, well, we have to have this, you know, these illegals to come pick our crops and everything for us. How many people in this country are on welfare that say they can't get a job or whatever? I would make it work fair. You either work or you get off it completely. And if you say, well, there's none of them jobs around here or whatever. Well, when the pioneers went to a place and the well dried up, they had to move.
That's right.
So if the well's dried up where you're living at, you go where the jobs are at, just like everybody else does.
You dig a new well or you go where the water is. That's exactly right. I remember in Afghanistan, in that so-called second world country, finding people that lived out in the middle of nowhere, and they would tell me how hard life was, and I would look at them and say, why do you live here? And they would look at me like I was crazy for even asking it, because my daddy, my granddaddy, and my great-granddaddy all lived here. But there's no water, so what are you doing here? All right, man, hey, the music's about to play. You be safe on the road. Where are you at right now?
I'm not even made it to Bucky's yet, man. I just crossed the river.
Oh, well, stop and get you some beaver nuggets, buddy. All right.
I wish they'd let a truck in there.
Yeah, I wish they would. Yeah, I know it. Anyway. All right, brother, take care. We're heading out. All right. We're taking a break. We're coming right back. Dipper number two, military-minded. What do you think? Are we going to be more military-minded than a Trump administration? Are we war hawks? No. We just want peace through strength. How about that? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live from the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three on a Taco Tuesday. And I think my favorite text, we need to save this one. We've talked about putting out some of our text messages as a tweet or a promo. Grab this one, if we're going to do that. But John from Lexington, South Carolina, just texted me the ultimate. He said, as I sit here enjoying my McRib on a Taco Tuesday, while the discussion flows between illegal aliens and toilet paper versus cat issues, I celebrate the fact that your show always entertains. War Eagle. Hit me some applause on that. That is...
Wait, I give him the hallelujah.
He got the hallelujah.
There you go.
And there's the applause. He got an hallelujah and an applause. The angelic host even liked that one. That was good. John from Lexington, South Carolina, we appreciate you, man. I forgot the McRib's out.
I didn't even know that either. I'm not a big McRib guy. Don't want to bring up the McRib again, but not a big McRib guy.
So you had one before?
No, as in I don't see the need to eat one. Okay. I'm not sitting there be like, you know, I really need a McRib right now.
I need is some of that pressed meat product. A pressed meat product in the shape of ribs so that I can say that I ate one.
But I think that text about sums up the show as a whole.
I think so tomorrow you and I need to eat McRibs while we're on the air.
Talk while with a mouthful of McRibs. So anyways.
Oh my gosh. All right, let's jump into Dipper number two. Military-minded. You ready? All you green suiters out there that listen, I know we got a bunch of yous. Redstone Arsenal, Anniston Army Depot, Maxwell Air Force Base, all you folks that are doing military things, Guard and Reserve. But not just y'all, we got a bunch of patriots and people who are family of service members and veterans. This audience is filled up with you, and I know it for a fact. Right Side Ruffians got a lot of veteran status. Here's the thing. Military-minded, what am I saying? Are we going to see a difference in how our military is handled, deployed, grown, stewarded in the next administration? Well, by God, I hope so. But I also have every reason to believe so. Why? Because I served under Trump. The waning years of my time in office were the early years of the Trump administration. So I retired after 30 years of service, mostly Guard Reserve, as an 06 in 2017. And I can just tell you that serving under Trump was different than serving under Obama. Serving under Obama was different than serving under Bush. Serving under Bush was different than serving under Clinton. Serving under Clinton was different than serving under Reagan. I had an opportunity to serve through each of those administrations, and I can tell you each one had their different flavor. And what I am looking at right now is a new administration coming in has got to make some changes. Got to make some changes. We're going to talk about several of those things, but I'll also say it's not just the administration, because we have to have a more military-minded Congress. And I think we're going to get there, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But by saying all that, does that mean I'm a war hawk? No, it doesn't. As someone who has been in combat, I will just tell you, I'm not anxious to send people to combat. Not at all. That is not my mode. But I'm also not an isolationist. I'm also not one who believes that our job is always to sit here and hunker down and watch the rest of the world. That is not where I'm at. Because there will be time when an ally calls and we have a duty to respond. There will be times when an incident occurs that affects a U.S. interest and we have a duty to respond. And there will be times when a threat occurs, and I believe that there's going to be a time and a place for what I would call unilateral action, not waiting to be struck first. But to do that, you have to have a U.S. military that gives some measure of credibility to the capability to respond. So I start with this. You may remember that almost a year ago, I brought up the Heritage Foundation and the report that came out. And they do it every year. They've done it since 2015. This is the 9th report coming up. But for the first time ever, we got what I would call a bad report card from the Heritage Foundation last year. Pretty epically bad. So let me lay the foundation for this. So the Heritage Foundation, the executive summary, I've got it in my hands, and it's still, my gosh, it's still, 28 pages long. But the executive summary, it's extremely detailed, very fact-oriented. I highly recommend it. You can go to, it's called the Index of U.S. Military Strength, where they do a deep dive into our capabilities, and they rank it in all sorts of ways based upon, you know, a number of criteria that are very measurable. But they also rank it in the standpoint of knowing what is expected. And what has always been expected is that the U.S. military would be prepared and capable of defending U.S. interests on a two-front war if necessary. Picture World War II, Europe and the Pacific, a two-front war. If there was a two-front war, could we sustain it? So the executive summary starts off with the opening paragraph. It says, as currently postured, the U.S. military is at significant risk of not being able to defend America's vital national interests. This is the inevitable result of years of prolonged deployments, underfunding, poorly defined priorities, wildly shifting security policies, exceedingly poor discipline and program execution, and a profound lack of seriousness across the national security establishment. That one gets me the most, a profound lack of seriousness. The war in Europe has laid bare the fact that we have limited inventories of equipment, munitions, and supplies. And then they go on to say, the Index of U.S. Military Strength by the Heritage Foundation employs a standardized, consistent set of criteria. In other words, this is not a fly-by-night study. What are they saying? Well, they're saying that this report card is supposed to show how well we are now. It's not saying where we think we might be. It's not one of those, we can get there from here. It's supposed to say where we are now. It's a true report card. And the things that they look for are, basically, that administrations consistently have said, what the U.S. military is there for is A, defense of the homeland, B, successful conclusion of any major war that could destabilize a region of critical interest to the U.S., and C, preservation of the freedom of movement within global commons, meaning that we are not going to be restricted from where we have to go. And that's for trade and for commerce and for military transport and for all the things it takes to be a global economy. So defending all of that, on a global scale, the U.S. has to have a military of sufficient size. I'm getting in the weeds here, but I'm getting to the point. We have to have, they say, and it's always been this way through multiple administrations, an ability to handle two major conflicts simultaneously or at least overlapping timeframes. Can we do it? Can we do it right now? What's the report card say? It says, no matter how much America might wish that the world were a simpler, less threatening place, more inclined to beneficial economic interactions, the patterns of history show that competing powers inevitably emerge, and the U.S. must be able to defend its interests. Since its founding, this is sobering, since its founding, the U.S. has been involved in a major hot war every 15 to 20 years. So the first time I heard that in my life, I was a young lieutenant, and I was riding down the road with my dad, your granddad, riding down the road with my dad. And I was sitting there in the car with him, my dad, a career officer who had two highly decorated tours in Vietnam, and then served through the Hollow Army of the Carter era and all that. You know, coming from that, my grandfather was a World War II Korea and Vietnam vet, retired as a general officer. And I'm riding down the road with my dad, and I looked at him, and I said, as a young lieutenant, I said, what do you think, Dad? Am I ever going to have to go to war? And I'll never forget this. He didn't even hesitate. He said, son, there's never been an American generation that didn't have a war. Really hit me. I mean, really got me. I mean, I had never thought of that before. But to say that and know that we also degrade our capabilities, knowing full well that our history dictates that strength in our military is required because every 15 to 20 years, every generation, if you will, has had a war, and yet we constantly let it degrade, and no greater example than what the Biden administration has done. So here's the sum total of where I'm going. Before I get into what military mindedness I hope we see, through this amazing report from the Heritage Foundation, as you get to the end of the executive summary, you begin to find the actual grades. Oh. Y'all, for the first time ever, they ranked the overall U.S. military as weak. They've never done that before. In fact, it really bothered them to do it. But they had to put down what they believed were the actual facts. It says, we characterize the services and the nuclear enterprise on a 5-category scale, ranging from very weak to very strong, benchmarked against criteria elaborated in the full report. Our analysis concludes the following. And they give a detail for each one. The Army is considered marginal. The Navy is considered weak. The Air Force is considered very weak. And the Marine Corps is the only one that was considered strong. The only one. The Corps, the only one that was considered strong. And the Space Force, they weren't even really sure how to assess it because it's still so new. But the Space Force, they went ahead and listed as marginal, knowing full well that their capacities are still growing and they're not even capable of meeting their current mission if they had to. Never been done before that a grade like that for the U.S. military. And by the way, don't think other people in the world don't read that. Don't think they don't have a copy of that on an intel analyst's desk in every one of our adversaries. And I'm not saying that I fault him for putting it out. It's a public record. It's a sobering public record. But if we're going to be military-minded, recognizing full well that no generation in American history has been without a war. And by the way, we didn't always seek them out. We didn't ask for Pearl Harbor. We were holding out. We were hoping Europe was going to fix it on their own. Pearl Harbor brought us into World War II. We didn't ask for 9/11. 9/11 took us to Afghanistan. We don't even ask for these things, and they happen. There are times when we have gone to war, Iraq. There are times when we have been taken to war, Afghanistan, World War II. There, literally, the fight on the Mexican border was Pancho Villa first raiding us 100 years ago. All I'm saying is this. We just had the U.S. military ranked as weak on the ability to handle a two-front conflict, and they even said weak as to whether or not we could sustain a full onslaught single-front conflict. All right, we're going to take a break right now. I know I got somebody hanging on the lines waiting to talk, so I'll wait and get that call when I get back from the break. Got to do it. Our folks out there got to have their ads, and we understand it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, military-minded. Now that you know where we are under one of the most comprehensive and, you know, proven reports, do you think we're going to make a change? We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades in here. That's what we're doing. Hey, let me go to the phones because she's been holding for a minute, and I want to honor her time. Is that Lee? Lee from Huntsville, what are you doing?
Just listening to your show and just thinking about things, you know, like I always do.
Well, what you think about? The military-minded stuff?
I am, and I feel as if this was the plan all along. When you look at a global level and those that operate at it, a weak America makes sense for the rise of other countries like China. Even, say, India, as to become superpowers. But because if we've got a proxy war in, with Russia, essentially, which is what we're doing, you've got Israel looking to go to war with Iran at any moment, or, you know, anything to bust open in the Middle East, right? And then you have China looking at Taiwan, and when we're stretched that thin with a fighting force that is, frankly, probably, I would say, has to be in the worst shape physically, that we've had in a long time, in the sense of what they're allowing into the service, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think there's a lot of dedicated people, but I think there has been a concerted effort to weaken the morale, to invite in people that might not be the best for our, you know, we need to be a fighting. We just need people who are interested in helping defend this country. All the other agenda needs to be left in the wayside.
I totally agree. It's like, I don't know if you heard the opening monologue to the show, but the opening monologue was on putting priorities in order and recognizing that it's not about all the little sub-agendas that the good idea fairy gives you. It's about the real mission. In this case, the real mission for the military is to defend the interests of the United States with military strength, whether it be through deterrence or, for that matter, having to go out and smack somebody in the face. But the truth is, you got to quit with all the little sub-agendas and all the little, you know, social experiments and the things that they're doing that water down the capabilities. And I agree with you. I think there are some who believe that we should be on, like, Obama's Great Forgiveness Tour for being Americans. We need to soften our stance. You know, we can be a softer, kinder, gentler America, kinder, gentler military. But at the same time, there are those who just think that the social experimentation of the military is a cool way to do things, and that has the same effect. All said and done, you're right. We got a clean house. Clean house.
Agreed.
All right. Thanks, Lee.
You're welcome.
See ya. So I will say this, military-minded. It's not just the Trump administration. There's that. But the military-mindedness of our officials is got to start with what's happening in Congress. And we may have a thing going on, because right now, 87 of the 189 Republican and Democrat veterans who ran for Congress won their elections this year. We're going to start the Congress with 13 new veterans in the U.S. Senate, and we're also going to wind up having 100 veterans in Congress. It's not been that way in, like, decades. That's like way before 9/11 timeframe. We're looking right now at, as the Vietnam era crowd has subsided in terms of their capacity to serve, a new generation of veterans is rising up, and we are now going to see literally 100 veterans just in Congress alone and 13 in the U.S. Senate. That's significant. That tells me, at the very least, there are people there who have served in some capacity who will get it. So are we going to be more military-minded? Well, the Trump administration certainly has evidence in the past that they intend to. National Security Advisor for President Trump this time is going to be Michael Waltz, who is a former Green Beret himself. We're looking at people in the U.S. Senate like Tom Cotton and others who have served. We're looking at people in the Congress who have served, like the guy who just, you know, beat the guy Shahi up in Montana, who just beat, what was his name, Tester. Bringing their records in with them, bringing their experience in with them, can be nothing but good, I would think, for the U.S. military, especially if they come in with the mindset of, we've seen how bad it can go, and we want it to be better. Now, I got more on this. Military-minded, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Last half hour coming up. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, y'all, this one, Alabama. I'm saying this show like, whew, goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. So in just a minute, I'm going to play you an audio clip from General Jack Keane, who is really my favorite military commentator. The guy has been there, done that, and has a street cred to prove it. So, JP, I'll be calling for that audio clip here momentarily. But look at this. I pulled this off of local news, KOAA.com's channel in Colorado Springs. Military recruitment is bouncing back. Okay, that's a good sign. I will say this. It's a little bit different when you consider the fact they had to lower the bar to raise the numbers. Does that make sense? But they point out that military recruitment is starting to bounce back after last year being one of the worst years on record. The U.S. Department of Defense said that FY23 was, quote, the toughest recruitment year for the military services since the inception of the all-volunteer force. I mean, that's, by the way, the all-volunteer force dates back to the 70s. Thank you very much. So the U.S. Army fell short of its goal last year of having 65,000 recruits, ending at 77% of that with just 50,000. The U.S. Navy missed its mark. Trying to reach 37,000 recruits, they hit 80% of it. The U.S. Air Force fell short by more than 2,800 recruits, hitting just 89% of their goal. The U.S. Marine Corps and the Space Force were the only outliers who met their mission on recruiting last year. However, this year, which just ended, because I'm looking at a report here from just a few weeks ago, this last fiscal year, which just ended, has a more positive picture as all five branches actually hit their recruitment goals. The U.S. Army hit its quota, but only after it lowered the goal by 10,000. So they dropped the goal. It's like moving the goalpost closer. They dropped the goal, and then they hit the mark. So they still didn't recruit what they used to. We still have a smaller force than we had, you know, pre-World War II. But I will say this. There has been an uptick in recruiting. And part of that is because they're, and I hate to say it this way, but they are lowering standards. And I don't mean that everybody who gets in has an asterisk by their name, not at all. But they are lowering the standards on the physical and the testing requirements and the high school GED requirements. And, oh, by the way, some of the other outliers, like do you have any criminal background or something like that. But they also opened up some programs that I thought, I have to give credit where credit's due. They opened up a program that is designed to bring people up to speed. It's almost like a pre-basic. So if you go in and then you go to MEPS and you actually like fail the PT test or you don't test quite high enough on aptitude on the SFAB, then they will send you to this remedial course. And I want to say it's 6 weeks long. I'm not positive. And I think it's run at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, not Fort Jackson anymore, whatever they named it now. But they run this course there, and it's two tracks. If you are a physical, you know, if you were physically troubled, they will spend time getting you in shape and then send you to basic. If you were an aptitude, you know, person that was struggling with some of the, you know, the issues of military testing, then they will get you up to speed and then send you to basic. What they're having is a great success rate with those who go to pre-basic that needed it, then graduating from basic. So it's really helped. All that to say, we've got to increase our recruiting. I've got a piece here from the AUSA, the Association of the U.S. Army, said that recruiting shortfalls had a major impact on special operations. They failed to meet their recruiting. This storyline is Dateline yesterday, by the way. After failing to meet recruiting goals for the past 2 years due to all kinds of things like COVID, market competitions, and a shrinking pool of people, the Army managed to turn around its goals, and they recruited their mark. But special operations units recruit their soldiers from within the ranks of the Army itself. So their slowdowns have now halted the stream of soldiers that special operations relies on. So it has a trickle-down effect in our capabilities. Now, military mindedness. I want to hear Jack Keane. So this is an interview with General Jack Keane, four-star General Jack Keane, retired, who now runs the Institute for Modern War. And he's on an interview with... This is Mark Levin, isn't it?
Mark Levin,
yeah. It's on an interview with Mark Levin. Go ahead and start it.
We have a new administration coming in. It looks like some of our enemies, I'll call them what they are, some of our enemies are taking notice and are a little nervous about it, the Iranians, the Chinese, and some of the others. So what do you make of this?
Yeah, well, absolutely right. I just want to congratulate you on your opening comments here. I mean, they were just spot on in terms of describing the global security challenges that we're facing. They are the most serious, the most dangerous, and the most challenging we have had since World War II. And I do believe that we're in a pre-war era leading to global war. That is the status that we're facing. The good news here is that all of these adversaries, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, who are cooperating, collaborating, and coordinating together in a degree that exceeded the expectations of all of our intelligence agencies, by the way, and they have been honest about that appraisal. The fact of the matter is they have to reassess, Mark, based on this election that's taken place, because they have been acting so aggressively, so assertively, because they believe that our leadership in the United States is weak, that we've lost the political will to confront them, much less go and fight them. And it's not isolated that Putin moved into Ukraine. It's not isolated that Iran operationalized all its proxies to destroy the state of Israel and drive the United States military out of the Middle East. And President Xi stepped up his game the last 3.5 years, intimidating and coercing Taiwan and the Philippines and our other allies in the region. This is all collectively happening because they believe they're going to be able to get away with it. And that's why this election has been a seminal event. And I'm convinced that President Trump knows that World War III is in the future, as you just described it, and that we have got to take action to restore deterrence in dealing with our adversaries. And one of those is rebuilding the military. It has to be done, and we have to fix how the Pentagon does its business, or we're going to be throwing taxpayers' money away. And we absolutely have to support our allies who are fighting these adversaries. Israel's fighting a major adversary. Give them everything they need to finish it as soon as possible. Ukraine is fighting Russia. Give them everything they need and finish it as soon as possible. These are investments in our security when our allies are fighting our adversaries.
All right, stop it there. So that's fascinating. So first of all, I look at this and go military-minded. If we are categorized as weak under the if we believe the Heritage Foundation's, by the way, the Heritage Foundation, in my opinion, is one of the most trustworthy conservative organizations out there for any kind of, if they do a white paper on something, you can almost take it to the bank. If the Heritage Foundation is going to rank our U.S. military as being weak and incapable of defending on a two-front war, and then we're going to have recruiting that shows that we were at 40-year lows, like not since the onset of the all-volunteer military have we seen recruiting lows like what we saw in the last year. And we're starting to uptick now. That's good. We got some new things in place, and that's good. But if, as we're saying all that, we're also filled up with woke policies and things that drive our standards to a lower level, which Trump now says he's going to root out. And then I take into account what I'm looking at with General Jack Keane, who, in my opinion, is one of the best military commentators out there. Say what you want about whether you want to send more help to Ukraine. Say what you want about whether you want to send help to Israel. I get it. But the reality is, take what he said into account, that the world is posturing itself in an unstable manner, and we had better be ready. He didn't say so we can go start it. He didn't say so we can even participate in it. He could say so that we can be prepared for the day that it comes. If it comes, we're not caught off guard. If it comes, we're not trying to play catch up. If it comes, we are not sitting there with, you know, on our hands, wishing that things were different because we spent so much time helping people transition to their gender identities while they were in uniform. None of that. We gave away all of our munitions without a plan to Ukraine. I mean, none of that. What we're looking at is, are we going to be capable? And are we, by being capable, going to help the world to be more stable? That is the question. Are we going to be military-minded? And I'm looking at a piece right now from STARS. STARS is a great organization. By the way, STARS, S-T-A-R-R-S, that's the organization. It's an organization dedicated to rooting out wokeness in the U.S. military. It's filled with retirees who are senior in rank. I'm proud to be a National Board of Advisors member. But Star has put out a piece that is very clear. It says the military priorities for Trump are to remove wokeness and to restore standards. I love that. I had not heard this, but they cite from the London Times that there's an estimated 15,000 transgender troops in the U.S. military who will probably be medically discharged once Trump takes office as being determined unfit to serve. And there will be lawsuits, and I don't care. Let it happen. But Major General Joe Arbuckle, who's been on the show many times, contributed to this article. And he said in a recent interview in the Washington Watch, he said, we have to have standards. There is no right to serve in the military. Nobody has a right to serve in the military. Standards drive performance, he said. And if the transgender community cannot meet those standards and they're not prepared to deploy physically or mentally because of that, they should not be serving. That is the bottom line. And I agree. Standards. And I love this. He says, we have to have standards. There is no right to serve in the military. So I'm going to run out of time. I know I am. But I'm going to run out of time saying this. Every occupation is allowed to legally have, here's Lawyer Phil talking. All right, I'm Colonel Phil on this stuff right now. I'm former legislator Phil on some of this stuff, but right now I'm Lawyer Phil. Here's the thing. Every occupation is allowed to have what they call the BFOQs. It's legal. It's the bona fide occupational qualifications for the job. The legal standard that says, yes, we have a job, and yes, we will reasonably accommodate anyone who has a physical condition or otherwise that might make it more difficult. If we can accommodate, we will. But every job is allowed to have bona fide occupational qualifications. What I'm saying is, if you're a firefighter and you can't climb a ladder, you can't be a firefighter. If you are an ambulance driver and you can't have a driver's license, you can't be an ambulance driver. If you are a soldier and you cannot deploy to war, you can't be a soldier. As simple as that. Bona fide occupational qualifications for the job. And if you can't meet those standards, get out, because you don't have a constitutional right to serve. You have to meet the bona fide occupational qualifications of the job. And we have got to get back to that. The military mindedness, it's huge. I've got a piece that I won't even have a chance to dig into. Daily Caller ran a piece that I thought was fascinating. A guy named Morgan Murphy wrote this. Came out a couple days ago. It says, time to make the U.S. Navy the fighting force that it should be. He points out, he said, the American taxpayers ought to be forgiven for expecting pristine, fully functional ships. We're being outclassed by the Chinese. He said, we may have more tonnage than they do, but our battle fleet is not near as big as theirs. They are making ships at record pace. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? Is it just because they want to have them? No, because the Chinese, they play the long game, and they're looking forward to what it means for domination of the regions they choose to take. And then I've got this from military.com. The U.S. Army is considering whether or not it needs to transition hundreds of officers to get out of combat arms to fill up other non-combat arms branches. In other words, if you're armor, infantry, combat engineer, field artillery, they're looking at trying to force transfer people to things like adjutant general, air defense, finance, logistics, signal. Why are they doing that? I think because they have some priorities mixed. I think because they realize that they've got more people that want to be warfighters, and they need some to not be truly the, they want some more supporters and sustainers, I guess is what I'm trying to say. All said and done, we've got to get back to where we have people that are staffed for the branches they want to be in, capable of doing the jobs they signed up to do, and then augmented in the ranks with people and equipment that will meet the needs, not just of today, but of tomorrow, and to fight a two-front war if necessary. We've got to get back to the Heritage Foundation finding us as fully capable. Wow. All right, I'm passionate on this one. Take me to a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, going to come back, get a few more of your texts. We're headed to the house. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right, and we will be back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, dropping truth bombs is what we're doing. A bunch of y'all texting in, and I'm going to go straight to one that I see Pete from Decatur squaring me away. He is correct. Pete, you are right. He says, Air Defense is a warfighting branch. Yes, you are correct, sir. I was reading it direct from a military.com article, which got it wrong, and I should have known better and gotten it right in spite of them. So, yes, sir, Air Defense Artillery, you are indeed a combat arms. John from Huntsville says, Jeff from Indiana gets an A-plus for his awesome phone call. Phil and JP are today's co-winners with an A double plus for their equally spectacular performances, which means they both get to share the imaginary golden roll of toilet paper. Congratulations.
Should we be honored or should we be insulted?
I don't know. What would your cat do if it had golden toilet paper? I don't know. Stephen from Somerville said that there was an additional report card. I guess he's talking about referring to additional as to the heritage thing. They said about the trans community being in the military, saying that one reason that they're kicking them out is because the medicine's not going to be there all the time. Well, yeah, medicine won't be there all the time, which is a part of why they're non-deployable. Plus, the transition is it wreaks havoc with the body. The transition, not even transitioning, the morphosis, their metamorphosis they're going through. Anyway, I get you. Ron from Huntsville says, are there any numbers on how many illegal aliens are applying to the military? I don't know, but I don't think they can. I don't think illegals can apply. I do know for a fact that you can come here as a legal immigrant and then apply for to join the U.S. military and then earn your citizenship quicker. I know that for a fact, but I don't think illegals can apply for the military. I could be wrong. I guess you're looking it up right now. Chris from Gadsden checking in saying, so you're saying that our recruitment goals are improving, but our military will not be as stupid and not as out of shape as they've been in the past. I'm not even going to take that one forward. I'm just going to leave that question right there. What'd you find out?
It just says that to join the U.S. military, non-citizens must be living permanently and legally in the United States.
Yeah, so permanently and legally. There you go.
Non-citizens must also have permission to work in the United States, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, which I expect. By the way, Chris from Gadsden, what you're implying is that there have been stupid militaries and out-of-shape militaries, and no, there haven't. Matt from Huntsville says, Matt from Madison now, he's changed his, can you change him? He's Matt from Madison now.
There you go, yeah.
He says, can you tell me there's ever been a president or elected official in federal government that was not out for themselves and for their own interests? Yeah. Me. But that's federal government. You okay? So, a lot of them. Listen, man, do not let yourself fall for the trap or the mental trap that just because someone is elected automatically assumes corruption. You can't do that. You don't assume corruption. You can see corruption, but you don't assume corruption. Innocent until proven guilty applies everywhere in life. And the very idea that someone would run for office and because they get elected, which, by the way, is part of the way our governance runs. You don't not have elected officials. So that being said, if you don't like it, Matt, go run for freaking office. Don't sit here and go, well, they're all corrupt. Ain't nobody's ever been all on the take, every one of them. That's crap. And you're falling for the oldest trick in the book, the idea that Satan wants you to believe that nothing good can come from government. And yet Jesus himself said, render under Caesar that which is Caesar's, meaning even he recognized there's a governance structure that will be in place. No leader is allowed to be there without God's sovereignty. So that being said, I can't tell you what everybody's personal interests have been, but I can tell you that the idea that everyone who gets elected is corrupt is just wrong. I didn't get to all the text messages. But hey, do not forget, there's more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.